Now to start checkbooks, here's something from our recent archives.
Thousands have been evacuated all over the country. Prague has been hit by a wave of flooding that is the worst in over a century.
Yes, it's the great floods of August 2002. Now, these may have been the worst floods for a century, but they certainly weren't the first to hit the Czech capital. Here is a poetic description of a similar disaster way back in 1596.
The sky's inclemency stirs up the angry winds. The watery clouds are soaking with ceaseless rain. The turbulent Vltava, swollen with rainy waves, bursting, impetuous, breaks through its river banks.
If you remember 2002, all this sounds very familiar. But for a number of reasons, these verses, going back over 400 years, are unusual. To start with, the poet who witnessed this Central European catastrophe was English. Secondly, she was a woman, at a time when education for women was more often than not completely neglected. And thirdly, she was still only in her teens, and was writing in perfect and beautifully crafted Latin verse. The poet's name was Elizabeth Jane Weston, the English maiden in the court of King and Emperor Rudolf II, and known by many of her contemporaries simply as Westonia. To find out more about her story, we start in the British Library in London, where Susan Reynolds is curator of Czech and Slovak literature. Her interest in Westonia began when she found out that the library housed an original edition of a collection of her writings.
In this, she inscribed her own name in 1610, describing herself as Elizabeth Jane, wife of Johannes Leo, agent in the imperial court and Englishwoman of the Western family, so she never lost her English identity. And I was able to see and handle this book for myself. I'd found out about her in my general studies of this period of Czech literature and literature at Rudolf's court. And when I knew that we actually had a book signed by the author herself in our collections, I was moved to go and seek it out. And when I read how extensive and how varied and diverting her works were, I simply couldn't resist finding out more about her, especially because my time I have written Latin verse myself, I know how challenging this is. And I felt a great sense of comradeship with, you might say, and I wish I could have met her.
The Prague of Rudolf II at the end of the 16th century must have been an intriguing place to be. The King of Bohemia and Holy Roman Emperor was a man of culture and of eclectic tastes. His court was a babel of different languages and a place of rich cultural cross-fertilization. But how did a teenage girl from rural Oxfordshire come to find herself in the midst of all this opulence? According to the records of the parish of Chipping Norton, Elizabeth Jane Weston was born in 1582. The records confirm that her father died when she was less than a year old, and it was her mother's second husband, the Irishman Edward Kelly, who provided the link with Prague. Kelly was known for his education and his knowledge of alchemy and the occult. This drew the attention of the Emperor Rudolf.
He was, as most people know, fascinated in alchemy, in the supernatural. He was a highly superstitious man by modern standards. And as well as wanting to find out the origins of the Philosopher's Stone, the Elixir of Life, and so on, he was also very keen on surrounding himself with those who could foretell the future. And Kelly was appointed as scryer, that is, a man who divines the future by looking into a crystal ball or similar reflective surfaces. And shortly after his marriage, which Edward Kelly claimed to be instigated by the Archangel Michael himself, he and his wife went off, leaving the two young children in the care of their grandmothers in Oxfordshire. But when these grandmothers both died, they collected young John Francis and Elizabeth and took them out to Prague. Now, in view of the bad press that so many stepfathers have nowadays, it's worth remarking here that one could not fault Edward Kelly as a family man. In fact, Elizabeth says that she loved him and he loved her like a second father, and he went to the trouble of engaging a tutor from Cambridge who gave both the two children a marvellous education. Elizabeth, so many contemporaries assert, was fluent in Czech, English, German, Italian and Latin, and this by her mid-teens. Cromwell, for example, the young Elizabeth I, and this at a time when contemporary sources state that for a girl to be educated at this level was not just useless but actually shameful, so clearly he was far ahead of his times.
So Elizabeth, as an obviously very bright and receptive child, was growing up in a richly stimulating cultural environment. This was not to last. In 1591, Edward Kelly fell out of favour with the Emperor. It's said that Kelly had rather rashly killed one of Rudolf's courtiers.
Not surprisingly, the Emperor was none too pleased and had him imprisoned, first of all in the fortress of Klivklot, and then later on he was brought to Prague. And exactly when and how he died is rather obscure. One account is that, and this sounds suspiciously familiar, he was killed trying to escape. Another is that he experimented with elixir of life, the Emperor, was told to try it on himself and did not survive the attempt. However, he died sometime towards the end of the 16th century, and this meant a disaster for his wife and stepchildren. The son was now studying in Ingolstadt in the university there. He was in poor health. He died in 1600, and this left just two of the family, Elizabeth and her mother. And the bailiffs were distraining on the family's property, including her mother's dowry, to which she had no right. And in despair, Elizabeth was extremely resourceful, set about writing impassioned appeals in Latin verse to influential patrons and appealing for their help. She even addressed one to the Emperor himself. And this appears to have been successful. One of the points she made was that she was exile. She was a desolate English maiden in a foreign country. If her property was seized, her chances of making any sort of marriage at all would be almost nil, because she would have no dowry. And yet, in spite of that, she seems to have saved the family fortunes and kept them above water in a way remarkable for a girl not yet out of her teens.
And how did she manage that?
Well, for one thing, she was brought into the circle of the Silesian poet Georg Martinius von Balthoven, who was 3 years older than she was, and he encouraged her to publish her verses. He also interceded tirelessly on her behalf, and in 1602 he brought out the first collection of her poemata in two volumes, and 6 years later this was followed by a second, and this was known as Parthenikon Libri Tres, literally three volumes of a maiden's writings.
And she was writing entirely in Latin. You said she spoke all these different languages. Why was she writing in Latin?
Well, quite simply, Latin was the best way of reaching a wide international audience, because to have written in Czech at that time would have limited her prospects of increasing her readership. Latin was not only the language of religion and learning, but also of international diplomacy. And when we look at the people to whom she wrote these Latin poems, they include not only English, French, Czechs, but also a Dutchman, so is a lingua franca, and as such enabled her to increase her appeal to many different readers.
Christ, rest the hope vouchsafed to me, but give me your aid, lest these evils should swamp my soul. I put my trust in no images, no human art. The sure salvation I hope for, no man provides. You are my hope, my concern, you are mine. Through the rocks, through the fire and rough seas I will follow, if you command, if you wish. I will triumph through trust, my petitions assured. Either here or above, in the house of your Father Supreme.
One of the people to whom Elizabeth had turned during her attempts to save her family's fortunes was the imperial lawyer, Johannes Leo. It seems that the two felt more than just feelings of mutual respect, and in 1603 they were married, a wedding that was accompanied by a string of Latin poetic tributes from their friends, one of which heaps praise on Leo and his lioness. In the next few years, Elizabeth combined work and family. One tribute says that she was equally apt in producing books and babies. Indeed, she had a total of 7 children, 4 boys, all of whom died in infancy, and 3 girls. But childbearing was a dangerous business in those days, and Elizabeth died in 1612 at the early age of 31. Her poetry lives on.
She's extremely readable nowadays not least because of the sheer scope and compass of her work. For one thing, of course, Latin was used not just for stilted proclamations on official occasions, but within the family. She writes some charming letters to her brother when he was a student, all in Latin, teasing him, telling him not to be too fond of playing his lute instead of getting on with his studies and so on. And this lightness and playfulness is carried over into much of her occasional verse. She writes for birthdays and other celebrations. She writes some lovely versions of Aesop's fables. She also writes devout intense religious meditations, and she also writes moving tributes to her mother and her stepfather. So she shows how flexible and how powerful a language Latin can be for every kind of usage, from the ceremonial to the intimate and domestic.
For what is a mother? What is our parents' loss that the ceaseless tears of children teach us to know? And now, as I join them, I mourn my mother's sad fate, torn far away, alas, from my native land. Never again will she guide me with motherly words, no more be there when I say, Mother, give me advice. Never again will she bless all my children and me, making the sign of the cross on each forehead and breast. But God, by his valour, will save all my friends who remain, and death, my enemy, he will constrain your power. I pray that my children be safe and my husband may live. With courage I'll bear all fate brings, whatever it be. And if I should follow my mother when that hour should come, then with my death a new, better life will begin. So, mother of mine, truly honoured forever, farewell, and take these tears of mine as your final gift.
Possibly the fact that she's less well known than she should be is because Latin itself has gone in decline in so many schools. And yet she's in so many ways a very modern figure. She was able to earn her living, or at least support herself and her mother, by her initiative and her pen. And she's buried here in Prague, if you're interested. She's just down the road in St. Thomas's Church, where you can go and admire her tomb. So she certainly deserves to be much better known. And if she hasn't yet been the subject of a historical novel, I think she certainly ought to be.
If you'd like to read some more of Elizabeth Jane Weston's poetry in English, the collected writings, edited and translated by Donald Cheney and Brenda M. Hossington, were published by the University of Toronto Press in the year 2000. And special thanks to Susan Reynolds, who provided so much information about Elizabeth Jane Weston for this programme, and also made the excellent translations that we've been hearing. That's all we have time for today, but you can, of course, find this programme again in both text and audio on Radio Prague's website. That's www.radio.cz. And it's also available as a podcast. From me, David Vaughan, and all of us here today, goodbye.